Before we go on to what we want to share with you in this session, and also you'll notice that there is a clipboard coming around, and we would like for you to add any comments you'd like to on that clipboard. The session this afternoon, we have some material we think you would be interested in, but I'm more interested in what you want to hear about, and if there are any things that we can present this afternoon that would make the sessions more practical, more directly to meet what needs you have or what interests you have, we certainly want to do that. I have laryngitis and have had since we had a dust storm here last Thursday. And I'm now taking some kind of a throat lozenge, and it's just about to do me in, so let me take it out. It's horrible. It's a Vicks of some kind, and it's we started this morning by suggesting to you that our brotherhood is not totally aware, it seems to us, of the tremendous changes that are taking place in the society in general, particularly in reference to the societal changes relative to the elderly. We tried to show you through graphs and other things how the population statistics have changed over the last 50 to 75 years and the impact that these potentially have on the church. In particular, we tried to point out that there were some special needs that the elderly population now has that maybe they did not have in the past or did not have to the degree that they have now, particularly due to some of the numbers of persons that we're talking about and the tremendous longevity that we're now experiencing. And we also suggested that for those of you that are preachers, that 1 Timothy 5 and Titus 2 are not being well preached or well presented in our congregation sometimes. It appears to us that spiritual food for the elderly is sometimes not presented. And elderly people have spiritual needs just like younger people do. But the spiritual applications of those things in their particular time of life may be different. And the challenges of the gospel change with the different ages that a person finds himself in and the levels of ministry that they're able to participate in. But Jesus came to seek and save all persons, including those that happen to be over 65. With those things in mind, we suggested that the church needs to take a hard look at a few things, and one of those was that we needed to evangelize the elderly. And we tried to point out that that senility is not a normal condition, that normal people have normal intelligence all of their lives. If a person cannot change, if it is not possible to change a person, then why are we evangelizing in the first place? And our Bible tells us that the power of the gospel is sufficient to change anybody. And it doesn't limit that to a person who is a teenager or a person who is a young married person. It's anybody of any age. And the power and the truth of the gospel is as plain and as true and as valuable to an older person as they are to a younger person. We are not evangelizing the elderly to the degree that we should, because of many of the misconceptions that we talked about. We talked about a number of misconceptions about the elderly this morning. Not the least of which that elderly persons are considered somewhat childlike, unresponsive, rigid in their thinking, and even some persons feel like that they're so close to the grave that it won't make much difference anyway, or other nonsensical kinds of statements like that you hear from time to time. If we went around the room, I'm sure that all of us could come up with examples of persons who have heard the gospel. Maybe they've never heard it before, maybe they've heard it a million times, but who have responded to that gospel in their old age. And some of these people who respond to the gospel in their old age have a clear view of what it means to be a Christian. Their salvation is real to them. And when you talk to them, the spiritual renewal is a vibrant part of their everyday life. They feel like a kid again, born anew. There's no reason to believe that an elderly person is any less responsive to the gospel than a person at any other age. There are many more of them out there, and there are many more of them that are either dissatisfied with denominational life or dissatisfied with the life that they have led that has been away from God. There are hordes of persons out there that are out of duty. These people can be contacted one more time and one more time and saved for God. The second point we tried to make, that we needed to evangelize with the elderly, that we have a better educated group of elderly persons who are financially more stable than any group of elderly person in the history of the world. They have a better support system, and they have better health than any elderly population we've ever had. We have people sitting in our church pews who've heard the best of preaching for 50 years. But yet, they're not turned loose. They're inhibited. We can have church growth seminars. We can send our young men to preacher schools. But the great talent that comes from living through the Depression, from holding a family together, to paying your bills all those years, to overcoming those diseases and disorders and the pains of this world. There are many older men among us right here that are also men of sorrows and acquainted with grief, who are rich in faith. What better person could a young person talk to, or anybody talk to, than a person who has tested their faith over the years of trial, who know who they believe, who have come to have a basis of knowledge of who God is in their life, because He's shown Himself to them in so many ways over so many years. We're not using our elderly persons as evangelists. We're somehow afraid to. P.H. Hill always tells a story. In fact, he doesn't always tell it, but he always tells the stories on his mother. But recently, last fall, she was taken to the hospital, and the emergency medical people messed up the billing somehow. And so he went down to the emergency medical office to personally pay the bill for the ambulance. And they were trying to remember who thus and so was. And finally, one of the young men there said, "Oh, your mother is the one who was trying to convert me. She was inviting me to church, and she was on the way to the hospital with a heart attack." And you all know stories where people have converted their plumbers and your yard men and on and on and on. For some reason or another, in the last 10 or 15 years, there's been such a de-emphasis on our personal evangelism. We believe in the priesthood of all believers, but that means the preacherhood of all believers too. The third thing we tried to point out is that our churches seem to be waking up to the need for serving the needs of the elderly. I tried to stress this morning that my personal concern and burden is here that the spiritual needs of elderly persons often go unmet. They seem to be either ignored or not acknowledged by the broad mass of the brotherhood. But just as teenagers have great spiritual needs, tremendous changes are taking place in their lives, so do elderly people. We tried to show that there is nothing in your life that will change every part of you as dramatically as when you retire and grow old. Your more changes will take place than even take place during adolescence. And spiritual threats come in at this time. We tried to show that under these circumstances, a person's faith is tested in far greater ways than you ever imagined. It is not easy to peacefully slip into old age. The devil is there once again. He has his net out and his fish hook, and he's after everybody. He doesn't go away just because you're old. And many older people suffer ravages of sin, and they're lost forever. Their ministries die. Their relationships with their children are ruined. And they die in old age in a depressed state because they've lost their faith. They've given in to sin. Jesus never promised us that sin would ever go away. Sin just becomes more sophisticated, more low-key, sneaks in on you, but it's always there. We said that the churches also need to be concerned about the emotional needs of elderly people and supporting them in ways like this and showing true interest, not a false interest, but true interest in the emotional makeup and the caring for elderly people. And so we also talked about physical support systems, including housing and nutrition and so forth. And we're trying to point out there that there have been some complaints raised by certain elements in the Brotherhood, rather divisive ones, I might add, who are so concerned about how they're going to spend the money that's contributed to the church. As we said, it appears to us that the only example we have of the judgment scene is not one where a person received the crown of life for a doctrinal debate, but a person receives that crown for how many persons they have visited when they were in prison. And that prison can be a person's own body, it can be a nursing home, it can be other constraints that life has placed on that individual. How many persons have we fed, and how many persons have we brought water to? These kinds of support systems provide emotional support. Physical things bring emotional supports because it really does show interest and concern and caring. Have you ever noticed when you go to the senior citizen centers how the Baptist Church or the Church of Christ and so forth say, this is how we take care of our people? And we kind of have to back away when we talk to some of the Mormons, don't we, or the Seventh-day Adventists, because they're doing a better job of taking care of their people. We're trying to tell all those people that you are all God's children and you are all our people, and our concern is for your soul. Well, I don't want to talk about everything I talked about this morning. Fourth, I said this morning that we need to provide elderly with real service opportunities, and we hope to talk about that a little this afternoon, in terms of meaningful work, not make work, but real work. It must make a difference that you are on this earth and that you are in this church and that you're doing something of value. If I make work for you or ask you to do something that is of no value anyway, I still haven't provided you with a meaningful life. Those who remain at work, at meaningful work, live longer than those who do not. And when you study those who remain at work, you find a very significant difference between them and those who are not working. Those who continue to work have a richer, by far, quality of life. They enjoy life more, they are healthier, they're happier, they're involved more. You can define work in many, many ways. But really, when you get right down to it, work means to an older person that I was there and I did something and what I did made a difference. You're not a non-person. It makes a difference whether I'm there or not. And so we summarize by saying that Christianity teaches us how to live and how to love one another. We're not necessarily saying that our society does not love elderly people, that they're not concerned about it, but it's oftentimes not reflected in the way that the Lord's church provides for all of its people, particularly in the areas of benevolence. So to continue with those thoughts, just have a few things I'd like to say before we take some questions. We have a lot of things I'd like to say before we take questions. For those of you that are younger, and then we notice that whenever you speak on a subject like this, the wonderful thing about it is you get a tremendous intergenerational audience. And so we have people here in their teens and their 20s and their 30s and their 40s, all the way up to 80s. For those of you that are young, choose your mate well. You are likely to live many more years of marriage after your children leave home than you will with children in the home. Now that's an interesting phenomenon that has only been true the last 10 years, and it's going to be more true in the next 50 years. As we pointed out, statistically, at the turn of the century, the average American lived 47.5 years. in 1940 in the state of Texas. The average Texan lived about that long as well. Very young state, not very many elderly people around. But what was happening was that if you married very young, you had your children right away, you spent your life in very difficult physical labor with not good sanitation and not good medical care, so that by the time your children were grown and you became a grandmother, grandmothers usually perished while the grandchildren were very young. That's not true now. It's interesting, if we had the time, we could go around and talk to the people in this audience who have great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. It's not the case anymore. So you need to be aware that when you get married these days, marriage has a great deal more to do with life than just raising children. You're going to have to contend with a situation in this world where you will spend more time without children in your home than you do with children in your home. Young persons also are in a culture where respect for the elderly is not a strong normative position. Our feeling is that it is truly there. That when you take a look at samples of what peace and comfort is to young people, if you talk to very young people about who do you like to be with or where would you like to go, isn't it true that very young children like to be with their grandmother? Because the things that mom yells at them for doing, grandma thinks is cute. When you saw the advertisements for McDonald's hamburgers and the little black boy takes somebody to McDonald's with him, he doesn't take his mother, he doesn't take his father, he takes his grandmother. And they both sit there beaming because everything he does is so cute and everything she does is so loving. This kind of respect that's built there in an intergenerational family is part of our fabric. When you sit back and think about your life, your mother was so weighed down with the everyday decisions that she had to make, and the work was hard. Her time was not yours. The time wasn't even hers. The time belonged to the jobs that had to be done. She was a drill sergeant. She was so concerned, and rightfully so, that you did the right things and said the right things. She stayed up night for worrying about you when you were sick and when you were well. And you were out doing things that were going to make you sick. But when you sit and think about those great experiences over your life, how many times does your mind float back to your elderly aunt or your elderly grandfather or grandmother or elders in your family and what a great impact they had on you, particularly spiritually? That if you were lucky enough to have a spirit-filled Christian grandmother and grandfather, they seem to have had as much an impact on you as your parents did. So I think that when the societal studies come out and they say that young people don't like old people, that they do not revere old people, they're probably stretching it a bit, particularly in the culture that we know, being raised as members of the church, or at least in the middle class Christian culture. And this needs to be tapped. There are some great things, some wonderful things about being elderly. You know, and our young people are so attuned at this point in time, particularly in our culture, to having it their way. I talked about this morning about the youth culture of the 60s and the tremendous impact that the 60s have had on the 70s and 80s. That it's only been in the last 25 or 30 years that a person was penalized for being elderly. Another thing I could have said about that, by the way, have you ever watched the old movies, particularly the comedies? You take a look at Buster Keaton, and you take a look at Three Stooges, or these kinds of short comedic movies. You notice that those people are bald, are middle-aged people. They're not now. Now they're hardly even teenagers. They look 11, 12, 13 years old, and their voices haven't changed yet. But if you look at the comedies and the movies that were made up to the 60s, the love affairs, the funny marriage kinds of things that were going on, the children raising and so forth, those men were all 35, 45, 50 years old. You couldn't make a thing like that now. It wouldn't sell. Nobody would believe that somebody who was bald like that was having any kind of fun or any kind of relationship with the ladies like that. Reorientation of our young people toward the elderly is something that we need to concern ourselves with. We can't use the traditional scriptures that we have been using. We probably need to look more at a fellowship orientation in our preaching and teaching. The second group of you that we might want to apply some of this to is what we might call young adults. Now, typically, you're talking about people in the young adult ages under 40, 25 to 40, generally speaking. At this time, a person begins to look at what's called filial maturity, the maturity or maturation of a family, the maturing of a family. It's during this time that families are established separate from the home. Marriages take place, children come into the world. And some real soul searching takes place where you say, well, I'm not going to do what my mother did. My mother made all these mistakes and so forth. And after your third or fourth child, and especially after that child has reached teenage years, you wonder how your mother ever survived it in the first place. There's a maturing that's going on through those kinds of experiences. And you get the view, you begin to get a view of what life cycle is, and you break the life cycle into thirds or quarter patterns. It is at this time also that a person first begins to look at aging, and it is a shocking experience for them, because they really do come to the understanding or come to grips with the feeling that I too am growing old, and I'm going to have some problems here pretty soon. So we all run out and buy youth dew and Grecian formula and all this kind of thing. Before we're 40 years old, these things usually take place. When you're talking to young adults as well, they think they're going to live forever. That's amazing when you talk to college students. They have no idea whatsoever about these things, and give them about 5 or 6 years and they really, really come back scared about what the future is going to be. And so our teaching there can take the direction that elderly persons serve an essential role model in all cultures around the earth. In 1 Timothy, the role models, and in Titus 2, the role models for the elderly man and woman are very well laid out. So as I pointed out this morning in quoting those verses, we said, now the Bible says, that the older women are to teach younger women, and it even tells them what to teach. To love your husband. And I gave you the example that one time my wife thought I wasn't being a lovely, loving husband. I have no idea where she got that idea. And we had words about something, and a Christian lady from next door came over who had been married 45 or 50 years. And she sat down with my wife and more or less told her that, you know, 20 years from now you won't remember this incident, that life is worth more than that, and you're Christian people, and you need to pull yourself up to a higher level than that, and besides that, your husband is always right, I think is what she said. But here was a wonderful example of a woman who did a thing like that. And in passing, she said, I'm doing for you what a Christian lady did for me. One time my husband and I had a knockdown, drag-out fight. We had 4 or 5 kids, and we had this going on and that going on, and a Christian lady came over to my house. And she calmed me down and she told me to love my husband because that was worth more than any fight that we had. and that 50 years from now, nobody's going to remember what this fight was about. It was very inconsequential. But what really mattered here was the family that you have established and the love that you have for one another. And she said then, as she was leaving, "You're going to find yourself in the same kind of situation one day. And when you see this happening, you do what I just did, because I'm doing what a lady did for me." But she said she did it because she was a Christian. She said, "I'm here because of what God did for me and for that lady who served me." She couldn't have preached a better sermon. She couldn't have provided better thought. But it was accepted by the young mother. And sometimes our elderly ladies want to teach, and sometimes they're trying to teach, but the hearts of our younger mothers are not open to it. Now, if the Bible tells those older women to teach those younger children how to love their husband and how to love their children, maybe we ought to talk to the young women about letting this happen. Exposing them to the off-the-wall idea that living on this earth 50, 60, 70, 80 years might provide a person with a few experiences that might just relate to the person's life. When you talk to young women about this, they say, well, they're not current. They don't understand what's going on now. What's different? Babies throw up the same way they've always thrown up. Husbands are inconsiderate the way they've always been. And if we believe that things are so different, why do we read the New Testament in the first place? The Bible tells us that people haven't changed. The problems are always the same. The pride has always been there. We have contended with the same sins ever since Eve caused that problem. Oh, I had to say that. I'm sorry. But think about it in your own situation. When you were a child, you looked to your grandparents or your elderly relatives in a special kind of way. And if you were lucky enough to have that experience again in your young adult life, there's a piece of you. There's a part of your heart that it always remains tender toward those elderly grandparents. And you get together with families and talk, or church people and talk. When you start talking about these things, they always tell you about that lady who did this, that, and the other thing. Not to change the subject, but even outside your family, we're talking here. We're talking the church family. was telling me that one of the experiences in her life that confirmed her faith was when she was about 15 years old. She did something in a Bible class. She explained something to somebody else in a Bible class. And one of the elderly widows happened to be there substitute teaching. And she kept her after class. And with tears in her eyes, she told her how wonderful this was and what a gift she had. She never forgot it. She hasn't used it much since then, but she never forgot it. So the sage grandparent, or the sage older person, is part and parcel of the life experiences of young adults. Our problem at this particular time in history is that everything that they're saying out there in the world runs counter to that. We know better. Let's teach our young people to open up and let the light of this experience and this love come in. Isn't it awful that a person can live their life and never have an experience like that? I can't imagine anybody growing up and not experiencing the love that I had for my grandmother. I don't know how you could be a normal person. You know, I don't know how you could put up with the pain of this world, you know, without having had a grandmother who loved me and thought I was cute no matter what I did. What about the middle-aged population? Now, I think I want to say more about that group than anybody else. Right now, the crisis is the middle-aged population from 40 to 55 or 40 to 65, primarily 40 to 65. I had some handouts back here, I think they're all gone now, about what's called the sandwich generation. This particular group is the group that seems to be in the greatest spiritual pain right now. When you sample these people, they'll say, "Where is this peace that passes understanding?" What they're talking about here is they are sandwiched in between the generations. The young people we have today are the most demanding group of young people we've ever had. This idea of children should be seen and not heard has long since gone away. The whole house revolves around the activity of the children. You wouldn't think of making a decision without first consulting the children and getting their ideas. I mean, where did this all start? Who's in charge here anyway? We're not suggesting that people should be insensitive to their children, but in many households we have turned major decision making over to people who have no experience and no adequate way of making those decisions. We have so much leisure time and so much money, and we're turning over this leisure time and this money to the needs of children. This provides the person in this population with a tremendous drain. The responsibility financially and the worries that go with parenthood anyway, and the use of this leisure with these children is tremendously draining. And also then, of course, as Christian parents, you're so concerned about what this is going to lead to. What kind of discipline is this person going to have? What kind of spirituality is this person developing? Well, then they turn around, oh, by the way, it doesn't matter whether they're in college or not. They come home from college, you know, they bring a whole trunk full of dirty clothes home. They're always out of money. They're always worried about this, that, and the other thing. They don't want you to interfere, but yet they still want you to back them up. And you still worry about them whether they're out of sight does not mean out of mind. And many, many godly parents call me up. Just had one leave here just a minute ago, saying she prays for her daughter every day. And she says, "I'm praying for you too, because I can't handle her and I hope you can." You know, you hear this all the time. But now we have a group of 40 to 65, which used to be the grandparents. But now they're parents. And they have parents, and they have grandparents who are still alive. And many of them are to varying degrees becoming dependent. It is based on those population statistics I gave you this morning, you can see how dramatic a change this is and how so many of us now have parents when we're 65 years old. I had a fellow come to my office one time and he wanted an instrument which would help him hear a television set better. And so there are some commercially available, inexpensive hearing aid type things that can be adjusted to a television set so that a hearing impaired person can sit in the room without blasting you out, you know. And so we purchased one for him, and he was 72 or 73 years old, you know, and I was showing him how to fit it and what to do. And he, oh, you don't need to show me, it's for my mother. And, you know, he's still living with his mother and things are going along. He was concerned about his mother. Now, his son came in and we have a course called As Parents Grow Older for persons who have elderly parents or parents who are beginning to age and to deal with some of the problems that they're about to have and to help them develop the best possible relationship they can with their parents. And of course, the son came in and he was concerned because he had children and his oldest son was just married and his youngest and this young woman was pregnant, and he had a father and a grandfather, or grandmother, great-grandmother to contend with. And of course, the weight of that was falling on him. Now you can say, well, dad's living by himself or mom's living by herself and she's doing just fine, but still you worry. Is she going to fall? Is she going to take her medicine? Is she going to do this? Is she going to do that? Is she going to make some bad decisions? Is she going to give away her money? Is she going to whatever? And you begin to search for how you can control your mother a little bit better, because you know she's not making the decisions right, because she's not making them your way. And you have a pull on you then on both sides. You have your children pulling on you on one side and your parents pulling on you on the other side. Your parents do not intentionally necessarily make a drain on you or pull on you. Many times it's of your own doing, because you just can't sit by and watch your parent failing in health or failing in mental ability or increasing in age. You have concerns for them and you do worry about that. Most of the times, these are aggravated by physical illnesses. As we pointed out this morning, once you reach 67, there's every likelihood that you will have at least one major medical condition to contend with. Fortunately, though, if you ask an elderly person, 75 years old, and they say, well, I've got diabetes, and this leg doesn't work, and this arm's broken, and the eyes, and this and so forth, and you'll say, well, has this slowed you down? And they'll say, no, it's just a nuisance. You know, I'm getting by just fine. Most elderly people accept at least one medical condition and go on with life as though that's kind of expected when you get old. And that's a wonderful kind of thing. But that's the kind of thing you worry about. Are they taking their medication on time? And are they doing this and doing that? And there's a real reason for that. How many times have you seen old sister so-and-so and she's still living alone or lives with her daughter or whatever, and every year she goes to the hospital and she'll stay there for 3 or 4 weeks and she'll come out just as good as new. And then in 8 or 9 months she has to go back to the hospital again. Well, she gets 3 square meals in the hospital. Sometimes at home she doesn't cook right for herself. It's very hard for a person to cook for themselves, particularly if they're alone. And particularly if they're elderly, it's a very, very difficult situation. Which is, by the way, several people have asked, you know, what can we do in situations like this? There isn't any reason why the church couldn't be a place where you could host a nutritional seminar for the elderly. You get people knocking down the doors to get in there. The home ec department has courses that people can take who are younger, for younger people. How can I manage a budget if I'm going to live alone or with a roommate, or if I'm going to just, it's just going to be my husband and I and we're both going to work. How do we buy and how do we budget and how do we prepare food and how do we keep it nutritionally balanced and not just go from junk food to junk food to junk food? There's some tremendous things, and most states have this information available to you from the agriculture departments, and there are a couple of utility companies that have some information like this available, and It's a wonderful way to get people into your church buildings. It's not a social event, it's an event that's really needed. Now, once you get them there, let's have something there to show them that this is how elderly people are supported in this congregation. They are put to work, and they're cared for, and they're a meaningful part of this congregation, and making a real contribution here. Well, this sandwich generation of persons is one that you're going to see more and more written about in the next 10 or 15 years. You have to make all kinds of decisions. This is the group that has to make decisions about death. When should a person be resuscitated? You have to make decisions about what the funeral is going to be like. You have to make decisions about when and if a person should be institutionalized. You have to make decisions about what kind of medical care is going to be provided, who's going to provide it, and how's it going to be maintained or followed up on. These kinds of decisions are not easy to make. And what works for you and what's wholesome for you and even what the Christian thing to do in your particular situation is very different from what it would be for someone else. You must assume going into these kinds of discussions, whether you're a preacher or a counselor, you must assume going in that everybody wants to be the best child they can be. You want to do the very best thing that's possible to do for your own mother. It's like the man said, one mother can care for 10 children and do it right, but 10 children can't care for one mother and do anything right. If you put your mother in an institution, there's no way that an institution can care for your mother as your mother. I can't do it. If you hire someone to live with you or to come in, an aide or whatever, to help you care for your mother or to monitor your mother, there's no way they're going to be able to do it to the degree that you can. Many times you build up such resentments and difficulties in your own life that you have such difficulties communicating with your mother that you can't do it right either, and so you'll turn it over to somebody else. But have you ever noticed there's always some little niece somewhere in the family who can get grandma to take her pills when you can't? There's always somebody who can cook those that okra, those grits or whatever, and she'll eat it, but she won't eat yours. One of the failing factors we have in this middle generation is that we fail to realize that many times we have messed up our relationship with mom. And mom has certainly, she is not a passive victim in this. Mom has messed up her relationship with you. But as she is going through these tremendous changes in her life, and you are going through these great changes in your life, sometimes you can let a lot of that go and you can develop a new relationship with your parent that you never had before. That was the real story behind On Golden Pond. Unfortunately, the movie did not reflect that as well as it should have, and it certainly was not produced by a Christian. But the point here is, how many elderly men do you have in your congregation that you just think the world of? They grab you with that big bear claw hand, and their voice booms when they sing that bass, and they love you, and they support you, and they encourage you, and yet, and you love them, and you would say to yourself, I wish my dad was like that, or I wish he was my grandfather, and yet his own kids are out of duty. His own kids won't have anything to do with him. They remember that man when he was young. They remember him when he was a young father who was out there working every day, contending with the world. And when he came home, he was cold and insensitive and unfatherly to his children. So many times, as young fathers, we're harsh and hard. Not because we don't love our kids, we don't know what we're doing. And as we grow older, we change our role. And as we move into old age, men take on very similar nurturing and caring characteristics as young mothers have. They become so concerned about how people feel. Young fathers are very insensitive about feelings. They see the child cry, they tell him to shut up. A grandfather sees a child cry and he has them in their arms. The same kind of thing you would expect in mothering, wouldn't you? The roles almost reverse. and some of the harshest, hardest, meanest young fathers become the deepest, most loving, and most tender grandfathers. But they've lost their own children. And they weep bitter tears over that. We in the middle generations need to wake up. We need to let that go. My dad was not the man I wanted him to be. I wanted him to be taller. I wanted him to be handsome. I wanted him to have money. I wanted him to be respected in the community. I wanted my father to be an elder, and he never was. But someday, some way, we had to let that go. I don't know how I would have turned out if I had been raised the way he was raised, if I had to contend with the depression the way he did, if I had the education that he had or the brains that he had or the things. I don't know what kind of a life I could have shaped for myself if I had been given the clay he was. But he saw to it that I got different clay. My clay was purer. It was better because he made it that way. And someday in my life, I've got to let that go and open up that relationship. I'm losing something that's very valuable. I'm losing the love that he's giving to other people's children instead of giving it to me. I've got to forgive him for not being all those things that I wanted him to be. And in the same way, women have a tendency to change roles. And so as they grow from the nurturing young mother, the caring person, the sensitive, the kind, young, loving person, the romantic young mother, she has a tendency to change over time so that when she becomes old, she becomes very political. Now, I'm using the word political to be kind. Because she's ready to tell you on the spot what your problems are. She is ready to straighten you out right now. And the thing that comes through to me on that is that 30 years ago, 40 years ago, she would have been so concerned about my feelings, about building me up, about loving me, and about our relationship, that she never would have said things like that to me. Or if she wanted to say things like that to me, she would have found a way. She would have found a way in a hug to do it. But now she's lecturing, and she's harsh, and she's caustic. How many times when you've gone into the nursing home have you seen that? You know, where the old man is the lover, and yet they reject him. And the old woman is the harsh, caustic person, and yet the kids go to her. They remember her in those distant, muffled memories as that loving, tender mother. And the great pain of being in middle-aged is sometimes you lose her. You can lose her because she changes her role. You can lose her because she loses her health. And unfortunately, you oftentimes lose her because she loses her mental abilities. The pain of growing old in our culture right now has to do with the pain of losing that person. Is it because they've changed roles? Is it because they've lost their physical and mental abilities? Decisions on institutionalization are made on those bases, nothing else. Not made on how much you love your mother. It's not made on how much your mother has cared for you, what contribution she's made for you. It's how much has her role changed. Are you willing to change? If you don't believe that a person can change, don't evangelize anybody. The power of the gospel is the power to completely and totally change a human being. And that means old people. And that means middle-aged people. And that means young people. I think it's terrible. It's terrible that I know old men whom I love deeply in the Lord, and their children have been robbed of that love because of their own pride. Just give it up.
Just read your Bible. The pride of this life will do you in. It'll destroy every relationship you have with your wife and with your children and with your parents. And that's, I should say beyond that, I got another little quickie here. We are in a spiritual family too. We've got brothers and sisters and parents and children in the Lord. And we're doing the same thing to them. It always hurts me when, I shouldn't say hurts me, but it bothers me when somebody gets up and says, Sister so-and-so passed away, and we need to pray for that family. I want to say I'm that family. We have an extended family in the Lord who really, really cares. Let's not be so quiet. Let's not sit by and let these things happen. Let's try to get our eyes open to what the fullness of the gospel can do in every person's life. I'm almost out of time. Let's talk about old age. Some of you in here are old. I had a lady come up here. Where is she? Did she come back? She's 75 years old, and she said, I said she was ancient. I didn't say she was ancient. I said, Brother Beebe was 82 when he was baptized, and he was ancient. But he looked ancient. He really looked ancient. Old age. Be aware of the role reversals. Be aware that you are not the same person you used to be. You can choose what kind of old person you want to be. Why don't you look back over your life and you choose it? What was the time when I was the best? Was it when I made the most money? Was it when I was a leader of the congregation and had the most power? Was it when I was the best speaker? Or was it the time in my life I could reach down and help a crying child? You decide what kind of older person you want to be. Don't let illness impose a sick old age on you. Don't let a family strife that has cut you to the quick all of your life continue. You make a conscious decision about what kind of person you want to be and be that person. And you will choose a rich, spiritual person every time. A person who is a widow who teaches and whose price is far above rubies. Plan for that future. Now you say, biggest question most people come up with, I don't want to live like that. I don't want to live in that nursing home over there. But I don't want to be a burden to you either. Go to your children and say, all right, I know what a burden that this can be and that can be and that can be. If this happens, you have my permission to do this. This is what I want you to do. Don't let that responsibility fall on people who do not want to make that decision. They do not want to make that decision. Nobody wants to put you someplace. Nobody wants to take away from you your responsibilities, your livelihood, your family, your home, or your possessions. You want your parent to be the happiest parent they can be. And they will be happy if they are placed in an institution, if they made the decision to go there. Excuse me.
You're saying you should tell them what you want them to do. Right.
And write it down.
I have done that, but I just wondered if...
Go down to the funeral home here and get one of these...
I haven't written it down yet.
Well, write it down. Go get you one at the North Funeral Home here in Abilene. Has a real good one.
They haven't been well.
Well, they'll give you one. It's a little book on how to plan a funeral.
I have that.
And after you've gone through all that, now say, now look. If I lose my physical and mental abilities, you are going to go through a long, protracted, hard grief experience because you've lost me and I'm still alive. Now, under those circumstances, this is what I want to do. I want to go to a Christian home. I want to go to a Christian, well, there are a lot of places you can go besides nursing homes. There are group homes. You can say, I want to live in my house. As long as I have breath in my body, I want to stay in this house right here. And I want you to hire a nurse or this or that. I want you to do this. This is what I want. Do it. Make them make the decision, though. And you know, they'll make a wonderful decision. And when you do it, you'll be doing it with all the fervor you've got within you, because this is what Mom wanted. It's not so painful. And you can be that child. Plan for that funeral. You all know what kind of funeral you want. You know who you want to be there, and you know what you want said. Write it down. Read those songs and pick out those songs. Plan for the eventual death. But plan for the known life. Where do you want to live? Who do you want to live with? How do you want to live? You have choices. People who are depressed are people that the world has moved in on, and they feel they have no choices. I'm locked in because of this consequence. Is it a consequence of my sin? Probably so. You know how we are, you know. No, it's a consequence of the devil. He's walking around out there trying to ruin your life. The Lord said that he's going to help you do that. Now, he help you contend with that. He never said that if you're a Christian, none of these bad things are ever going to happen to you. But he did tell us how it's going to turn out. He did tell us who's going to win this thing. Decide what you want to leave behind. How many of you in here can remember sitting on an aunt's knee or an uncle's knee or a grandparent's knee and they told you what they wanted to leave behind? Now let me say this very clearly. We have an intergenerational problem right now in our society we hope is going to go away in the next 40 years. But the people that are old now have a great deal of difficulty talking to the people that are younger now, or middle-aged now. And a lot of it is that older people have always been told you don't want to whine, you don't want to cry. You want to be a rugged individual. You want to stand on your own two feet. Fight it through. You can do it. And so they haven't dealt very much with their own feelings as they've gone through life. And we have a lot of problems in older people right now that we probably won't have as many of that kind. We'll have other kind of that kind when they get a little older. And so a lot of times the older generation has not shared very much with the middle-aged people. I want you to do this. I want you as grandparents or parents to grab those kids of yours by the lapel and say, I want you to know what's meaningful in this life. I've lived here 80 years on this earth, and this is what it's all about. This is the summary of my life. What is it? What did the preacher say was the summation of everything? He told us to fear God.